Step inside a Protestant church and go to hell. It's the law. That more or less sums up what my next guest was taught growing up as a cradle Catholic. So how did she end up spending a year visiting Protestant churches all over America? Well, that's what we're going to find out this hour. Good morning. It's about 10 minutes after 8 o'clock, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. My guest this hour is Suzanne Strempec-Shea, the author of 5 novels and a number of memoirs. Her journalistic work has appeared in Yankee Magazine, the Boston Globe Magazine, Philadelphia Inquirer, and others. Her most recent work and the subject of this morning's program is Sundays in America, published by Beacon Press. And she joins us by phone. You can, too. Here are the numbers. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. 800-642-1234, toll-free. In Madison, it's a local call for you, so please use 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also reach us via the Internet. Here's the email address, talk@wpr.org. Now, welcome our guest by phone. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Thank you for being with us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. One of my favorite parts of the country you're in.
Well, mine too, but I'm lucky enough to live here.
There you go.
Let's start by talking a little bit about the Catholic faith that you grew up in. What was that like?
Well, where I'm sitting right now is about a mile down the road from the Catholic church in which I was raised. Literally, my grandparents, when they came from Poland, were married in that church. My parents were married in that church. I was married in that church. My mother and I, 30 years apart, attended the parochial school next door. And 30 years apart, my mother and I were both told, if you go in any other type of church than the one next door, than any other type of Catholic church, not only will you go to hell, but first the roof will fall in on you. So sort of a double whammy there. And I believed that at the time I was growing up, it was a very insular place where I did not know any Protestants till high school. So I had 8 years with just the kids that I was going to grammar school with and studying in church with. And basically, we bought everything we were told. And it wasn't until I was about 47 that I started venturing into any other types of churches.
And did your faith carry into adulthood?
Oh, it did, definitely. Definitely very strongly, too. And what wavered it a bit was when I was 41, which is about 8 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I think, any kind of shattering news like that makes you start thinking about things in general. And I began to think about my faith in different ways. And so that was probably the only time that it received a few dents or a few delays. And I really only came up with the idea for this book about 2 years ago when Pope John Paul II died, and I began thinking, I'm still not feeling the same about my faith that I have for, let's say, the last 5 years, and also I began incessantly watching the wake and funeral of the Pope and thinking, gosh, the fervency of the mourners is really drawing me, and I feel jealous. I can't feel that way anymore. And so I was transfixed by that, and I also began to think about, well, I know that this man led my church. I realized that, I don't know, do the Mennonites have a pope? Do the Quakers have a pope? So I began thinking about that, and being a writer and living here with my husband is a journalist, a columnist, and very often any idea I come up with, he will often follow that with, well, you should write about that. So I started thinking about writing about all this.
Okay, so take us from there to the decision to go around the country for a year and visit all these other churches.
Well, that was about a year to make that decision. It was April of 2005 when Pope John Paul II died, and I began the journey to the churches about a year later, April of 2006, at Easter time. And it took me about a year to figure out, how am I going to explore all these other churches? My first stop, although I Google as much as anyone else, I still go to my local library, and my first stop was a visit with a reference librarian here in Western Mass. And I said, you know, I need to know how many other types of Christian churches are there other than Catholic. I was thinking at first, you know, maybe I should visit every other kind of church and religion in the world, but then I realized when I was growing up, I didn't know about Hindus. I didn't know about Muslims. I didn't know about Jewish people. I knew that there were Catholics and then there were Protestants, and that was it. So I thought I'd explore the Protestants. And this reference librarian told me there are 37,000 types of Protestant churches to choose from in the world. And I said, well, that's kind of a lot. And then I said, well, how about just in America? I said, well, North America, she could get it down to about 2,000. And so I said, well, that's still kind of a lot. So then I had to take that list and think, well, which ones do I want to attend? And am I going to go into these and I'm going to sit with people and say, well, what's it like to come here? What's the history of this church? You know, can you tell me about the worship and that? And I realized that my writing style that I most enjoy is being in on the story, just being in sort of in the first row, if you will. So I thought, well, I'm just going to go to these churches. And then came the process of picking out which ones. And that entailed kind of looking around my New England area and what was on every street corner in every small town center, the Methodists, the Episcopalian, the UCC, the Quakers. So I wanted to hit those sort of, you know, likely subjects. And I also wanted to hit some of the ones that are very big in our culture these days, literally big, the mega churches I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to some of the very small ones that are maybe, you know, endangered species, like the Shakers up in Maine. There are four Shakers left in the entire world. Four people belong to this religion. So, you know, I had such a span to choose from, and I sort of laid out a proposal of what I was going to do for the year and stuck pretty much to that. Sometimes a church would come up that I'd really want to go to, and I would make a different plan for that Sunday. But it was, you know, kind of just laying this out and saying, okay, here I go. And from Easter of 06 to Easter of 07, I just went to church every Sunday.
Well, I want to talk about how you were received in some of these various churches and what your experience was there. I guess I want to start. You piqued my interest when you were talking about the Shakers and there only being four of them left in the world. What was that like going and seeing these people and talking to them? And what did you learn about their faith? And why are there only four left?
Well, those are all good questions, and it is one of the churches that I'm asked most about as I'm going around talking about this book, because people are fascinated that I think they're most fascinated by the fact that they don't procreate. You join up to this religion. It's a communal existence on a beautiful farm in central lower Maine, and they've got hundreds of acres, and it's just a gorgeous setting. But there are two elderly ladies there, and a man in his 50s and a guy in about his 30s, and that is it for the members. And they have some volunteers that help them with the work, but they basically run this place, and they create crafts that are sold. And what it was like to be there it was a bit sad, because, you know, here's a religion that has its own traditions and beliefs and all this. And I would say, you know, in a couple of decades, it's probably going to be not unlike the other Shaker villages. We have one here in the western part of the state that is a like a living history museum. And you go there and you can walk around. Oh, this is how they used to live. Well, this is how they're living now in this one. So I really felt privileged to be there. And as far as talking to them, I chatted a little bit outside after the hour-long service, but you have to understand that for none of these did I ever write ahead or call and say, well, I'm working on a book about the rest of Christianity, and I would like to come to your church. I didn't want people to be alerted to, well, we've got to put on the good hats, we've got to sing the best songs, or we can't talk about the things that we normally talk about because there'll be a visitor. I wanted it to be as if you or anyone else walked off the street, what would your first experience be? So I felt, well, it's a public place, so I don't have to notify them. If I were coming to your home with a notebook, I'd probably have to tell you that I'm going to do a story on you, but not in this kind of a setting. So, you know, we chatted outside just a little bit about, you know, locale and that sort of thing, but they were rather in a hurry to cross the street and get back to their house. I think, you know, that's their time poking their heads out with the rest of the world, and they did not seem to want to spend a whole lot of time out there. But the service itself was very nice. It was, It reminded me of a football game, actually, because the two women sit in the front row of maybe 8 or 10 rows of pews, and all the female visitors sit behind those two women, and the men face us, the two men in the front, and the men that are visiting are in the pews behind them. And it's in a church with a little, just very spare meeting house with a wood stove and a clock, and that's about it for technology. And there's a reading and a song from one side, a cappella, and then the other side answers, and it kind of goes back and forth. And it is very brief, not even an hour, and very, very much stressing the Bible and stressing nature and stressing joy. And you could look out the window and see the orchard, and you could look out the window and see the farmland, and it was quite a gorgeous experience.
We're going to be talking about a lot of other experiences, and I don't want to dwell on this one. How were there other people there besides yourself who weren't members?
Oh, there were. This was the probably the only church where the members or the visitors outnumbered the actual members, because here you have the four members, and then there might have been maybe a dozen females behind the two women, and maybe another 10 or so guys on the other side. And we were all looking around because they had songbooks, but certainly the members know what they're singing, and they just burst into a song, and the rest of us would be sort of shuffling the pages. And the only one that everyone seemed to know was the one that it ends up on all the commercials and everything, and we're very familiar with it. 'Tis a Gift to Be Simple, and everyone was launched into that, and past the first verse, they were kind of lost. But at least we knew one of them. And, it was, I think a lot of people were there, just to see this. They were locals to some extent. It wasn't tourist season when I went there, so I can only imagine what it's like in high season when people are really passing through Maine.
Okay. Well, we're going to keep talking about this, and we have some people who are starting to call in now who have questions or comments of their own to make, and you can join them. There's still a line available for you if you call now at 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234, toll-free. Or at Madison, please use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. We're talking with Suzanne Strempik-Shea, who is the author of the book Sundays in America. And that's what we're talking about this morning. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine today. Here's what's coming up later on here on the Ideas Network. The talk turns to antiquities after 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Who owns antiquities? Should they be returned to their original countries? Gene Faraca talks with the director of the Art Institute of Chicago and with a visiting scholar at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. That's after 3 o'clock. Gene Faraca, Here on Earth, on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about a new book just out called Sundays in America, A Year-Long Road Trip in Search of Christian Faith, written by Suzanne Strempik-Shea, and she joins us by phone this morning to talk about her book, and you can join us as well. Here are the numbers, 800-642-1234, toll-free, 800-642-1234, or in Madison, it's 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. One of the things that we usually see and hear, we see the and hear about the extremes in religion in the media. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was how that contrasts with what you saw on your journey around the country.
Well, I certainly saw some places that lean on fear and damnation and the hellfire and, that expected sort of preaching, but they really were in the minority of those that I visited, and I didn't do a lot of research ahead of time as far as, well, what do they discuss in this church? I chose them either for, again, their prevalence in my area or across the country, or they're being in the news again, say the mega churches, or perhaps there was a celebrity member that caught my eye. Let's say I went down to Jimmy Carter's church, a church he founded actually with about 30 of his friends when they left Plains Baptist Church during his candidacy for presidency, a black man wanted to join his Baptist church, and the pastor said, "I'm sorry, you can't. We don't take blacks in this church." And Jimmy and about 30 friends left and went down the road and started their own, which is called Maranatha Baptist Church. And he teaches for an hour a Sunday school lesson before each service. So I wanted to go down to see that. And I sort of hung that, being a former reporter, I was hanging things on the pegs of the time of year as I would a story would be writing for a paper. So I'm thinking, well, it's 4th of July. I should go and worship with a president or a former president. So I went there. But so I didn't do a whole lot of, you know, as far as content. I wanted to go to a church because it interested me in the idea. But, you know, an example is I went to Barack Obama's church, Trinity United Church of Christ, not far from you in Chicago. And I knew that Reverend Wright was certainly an interesting figure. I had known that much from the bits that I had read ahead of time. But what brought me there was, and again, this was 2 years ago that I visited. It was for election season of 2006. And I knew that Barack was an up-and-coming politician, and I had heard some speeches of his and read about him, and I knew that he was very close to his Christian faith, and it was important to him. So I wanted to go to a church that was attended by someone who was a public figure, was a politician, and who was very involved in his church. So that was my first reason for going. So it's kind of interesting now because I did attend there, but the day that I went, Reverend Wright, who was still connected to the church at the time, was not there, and I heard I had the service led by one of his staff members, and it was a gorgeous service. So it's in the news now because certainly, you know, endless loops of what Reverend Wright was saying, and then the visitor, Pastor Flegler, but I think that, you know, if that was my only one and only visit, I heard a love-filled service and worship and song, and I was surrounded by people that just made me so much at home. From the moment I walked in, I just commented there was a breast cancer survivor awareness table, and I thanked the woman. I said, "Well, I'm a survivor," and she said, "Well, so is my mother. You come here with me." And she led me into the sanctuary, and she introduced me to everyone within about 5 miles, and I was made to feel at home, and I just loved it. And if Trinity were down the street from me, from that one experience that I had, I'd be there every Sunday.
Well, I wanted to ask you what your experience was like going to church with Jimmy Carter.
That was really interesting because it was the only church that I had to be. Well, actually, I went to West Point for Memorial Day, and I did have my car frisked, but at Jimmy's church, you must go through Secret Service, who will go through your pockets and go through the contents of your bags, and you'll be wanded and all that. So you're searched before you go in, and you enter. And this is a church with literally still about the same 30 members. It's a very quiet area that they're in, and they have still the 30 members. But in a sort of a nod to how the Shakers experience was, there were many visitors as well. And this church holds about 300. Then they have a spare room with a television feed. They have parking for buses because, again, in high season, they will very often have a lot of visitors. And I was asked, I was by myself, and I was directed to sit in the front row with a family. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great because I'll get a good view and all this. And I am a fan of Jimmy and so much that he's done post-presidency. And it's just in awe of, you know, how he just keeps going and finding ways to help the world. And so I was excited about this. And so I was sort of, you know, bowing my head in prayer as the pastor, you know, just as an opening prayer before the Sunday school. And I can sense someone is walking out of a room and sitting sort of kitty-cornered to me on the next chair. And I look up, and it's the president himself. So that was sort of interesting. And I'm trying to pray, but at the same time, I'm just, you know, trying to say, well, all right, this is what he wears, and this is what he looks like. And he spoke for about an hour, and we were certainly schooled in, it was reading from Paul, and it was about husbands and wives, and Jimmy was very honest about female-male problems and relationships, and brought in a lot of facts about his family and his kids, and it was very homey, informative, not stiff at all lesson. And then you have to really feel sorry for the guy who's the actual pastor there, because the minute the president stopped his lesson and the regular service began, everybody cleared out except for me and a handful of people and the 30 members. And so the funny thing is, if you do stick around to the end of the service, you can go outside by the rhododendrons, and Jimmy and Roslyn will stand there and have their picture taken with you. So it was, you know, it was a bit of a different experience. But as far as worship, it was, the only note that I was disappointed in was, here is a man who goes around the world, you know, battling for people's rights, and he is not in favor of gay marriage, and so that was disappointing to me. But the rest of it was quite interesting.
Well, you mentioned being searched by the Secret Service. You know, there's an old Protestant hymn called "Search Me, O God." Maybe they could have sung that there.
Hear that one.
Yeah, well, I won't sing it.
I like it.
I won't. I know the first verse, but I won't sing it for you. Let's go to the phones. Let's take a call from Bob in Burlington. Bob, good morning. Thanks for calling. Bob, I think you've got your radio on. I think Bob's got his radio on, and so he's getting the delay. So he'll be joining us in about 5 seconds. Bob, are you there? One more chance. Bob, turn your radio off.
Darlington?
Yeah, Bob in Darlington.
In Darlington.
Yep, turn your radio off.
Okay.
That's your problem. There we go. He's setting down his phone. I'm doing the play-by-play here. This is like a hockey game.
This is great. I like hockey.
Yeah, well, so do I. Anyway, when Bob in Darlington gets here, we'll hear what he has to say. I think he has a question directly for you about your experience.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Bob. You're on now.
Have a nice morning.
I hope I do.
What do you think about us wonderful hymn-singing Methodists?
Oh, fantastic. You know, what dazzled me across my entire year was that no matter what the type of Protestant church I was sitting in, they sang every single verse.
That's right.
You know, and that's not to knock my own Catholic tradition, but I'll tell you, out here in Western Mass, there is a very popular church, and one of the reasons it's a popular destination is because it lasts, the Mass lasts 25 minutes, and the priest gives you a joke for the week. So, you know, I'm used to being in a church where folks want to get in and get out and go to the mall and go, you know, have their movie and meal and all that, and here I was in a church where people really took their time, and they're saying, oh, there's 8 verses. Okay, we're going to go through all 8. And I loved it. And, you know, I enjoy singing when I'm in a group, not certainly solo like John's saying. But, you know, I thought it was great.
Can I tell you a short story about my life as a youngster?
Sure.
I sang in the Norwegian Lutheran church in Devil's Lake, North Dakota as a youngster. Simultaneously, I was going to Methodist Sunday school, and then my best friend was Catholic, and I'd attend Mass with him from time to time.
Isn't that something? And how did that make you feel?
It made me feel wonderful, because I got a real good description and look at Christendom, kind of across the board. And I love. And then who taught me how to play? I was a very good basketball player. Who taught me how to play basketball? But a Catholic priest, Father Morris.
Isn't that cool? Did you end up with one specific religion after that experience?
Audrey and I were married in my old great-grandparents' German Lutheran church, St. Peter's in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. But then we converted to Methodism because we felt a little more comfortable there, because Lutherans are kind of strict. And, it's just a matter of choice. But we love all the Christian churches.
Well, you bring up a good point, because actually, it was about a month ago, Time Magazine had a survey by the Pew Foundation, and it was that I think about nearly 45% of Americans now will change the religion of their birth. So you started as one thing, and about half of us, almost, are switching to something else. So it's you were in that trend earlier.
And my mother used to talk about when she was a little girl growing up in an area that was a polyglot of a lot of different nationalities and religions, that they would play a funeral. And they always played Catholic funeral because they had the best rituals. And so there were more parts to play, because there was somebody with the censer and somebody with the holy water and all of that other stuff. But they were all together. And, you know, kids don't really notice those differences. I mean, they can be told about them by adults, but when they're in the neighborhoods playing, you know, you don't pay that much attention to it.
No, and I think you know, to have that experience as a child, to poke your head into other buildings, is, you know, what's the harm? It's just I think it's ridiculous in a way that I was 47 when I started this. And certainly I was a reporter, and I went into churches, let's say, if there were a prayer service after some disaster locally or a town official had died, you know, to go to the funeral. But I didn't go for Sunday worship, and I didn't know what went on. And so how do we find out about other people? How do we find out about other cultures and other countries? And, I mean, even, you know, what goes on that building on the corner that we pass? Oh, nice people going in and there on a Sunday, and maybe I know some of them, but I don't know what goes in on the, you know, in there.
Here's an email from Steve in Madison. He says, I now belong to a liberal interfaith church, but was raised in a conservative evangelical Protestant church. Like your speaker, but in the opposite direction, we were taught that the Pope is the Antichrist and that Catholics were in danger of going to hell.
See? Yeah, and as I'm talking about this book and going around, a lot of people will be nodding when I talk about the roof falling in the hell, and then hands will go up and say, well, but I'm Protestant, and I was told not to go into your place.
And marrying someone from another faith, I mean, good grief. I remember my parents were very worried because I was going out with a Catholic girl for a while, and they were afraid I was going to marry her.
See? Yeah, and my sister married Episcopalian, and there was talk at the time, and this was the late 70s, would they be able to go beyond the communion rail, which at the time, certainly we had stopped using the communion rail for a communion rail, but it's still locked in the middle, and were they going to be allowed, you know, weddings, usually they open that little gate, and the chairs will be put right in front of the altar for the couple, but there was lots of discussion, and they finally were allowed to, but, you know, it is, and that's not that long ago.
Well, you know, and then there's, you know, well, how are the children going to be raised?
Sure.
Baptism and that whole thing. And don't you think that a lot of the differences between denominations made a lot more difference, were more important or were more emphasized in our parents' generation rather than today?
I do think so, John. That's a good point. And as I was going around for a previous book and talking about having this idea, this was a couple years ago, and I was at a book club, and my hostess was serving me tea, and she said, I get that book. She said, I'm on my fifth religion. You know, so it's sort of like, you know, like, oh, I lived in five towns. Well, no, I'm on my fifth religion, or I have my fifth car or something. And it's something that I think we feel freer to do, where, to be honest with you, and I write about it in the book, when I went to the Shaker Village, my mother was my companion that day for travel, but when I was opening the door to say, you know, well, I'm going to go in now, she said, I'm staying here. And she had brought books, and she's a painter. She had brought her watercolors. She had brought a little cooler. She was camped in that front seat of the car, and she said, I am not going to go in there. That wasn't something that she wanted to even, you know, enter or even look in the windows. She didn't even want to set foot on the grounds, really. And I honored that, as she's honoring what I'm doing, you know, but it's a different era. And, you know, I'm sure there are still people that are saying, I am not going to enter another type, but I think, you know, they're losing opportunities for learning about who else is in our world.
We'll go back to the phones and take a call from Bill in Sun Prairie. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. I have two things in common with your guest. Number one, I was raised in the old Catholic Church. Number two, I'm a cancer survivor. I could talk all day on this, but I'll try to really condense it. When I was young, my mother tried to raise me in the Catholic Church, and we had the old Latin masses. I'm 65 years old, and I had three impressions. Number one, I was totally puzzled. I didn't understand it. Number two, I had great fear. Everything was a sin. My prayer book had these little prayers that were plenary indulgences, and if you said these certain things, you could get out of purgatory, burning in purgatory for 7 years. So I'd say those so I wouldn't burn. And I wore a path going to confession. The third thing is that it had absolutely no relevance to guiding me in life. So I broke free from the church when I hit puberty. I just couldn't take it anymore, and did a study of religion, and probably found the most affinity with the Eastern traditions of Zen, Buddhism, and Taoism. So what I concluded is basically you can be a moral, good person and not believe in God or go to church. Basically, the same problem that Socrates faced in his time, there was anarchists on one side and superstitions on the other. And he said, you know, there's a middle way. There's you can lead a very good life being wise and philosophic. So like your guest comment on all this.
Well, I agree with you that, you know, I think, you know, and here I have you know, spent this year doing this and the time put into the writing, and actually it's fired me up to want to visit more churches. But on the other hand, I really feel, you know, that religion, man ruins God for people through the creation of religion because, well, we've got these rules and, no, you can't come in this building because this is your lifestyle and we believe this, and if you don't believe this and that, and, you know, God is love. And that's the thing that stymied me about the places that I felt least comfortable in were the places that were exclusionary to some degree or were preaching, well, we should not like these people or these people. And I'm thinking, you know, this is supposed to be a house of God, and if God is love, well, where has all that gone? So it does get caught up. I agree with you. You know, it can be something that just flattens you out and you look elsewhere. I still identify myself as a Catholic. The type that certainly I was brought up in, I don't know that I could ever totally disconnect from it. I think there are some good things about it, but I know what you mean about being told that everything is wrong or sin, and I spent enough time on those very same pages of my prayer book. How many years can this buy me? Because I know I'm going to be in there forever, you know, that sort of thing. But you're not alone in looking around, definitely.
We're talking about religion this hour, and specifically the genesis, if I can borrow that word from the Bible, of this discussion, the publication of the book Sundays in America, Year-Long Road Trip in Search of Christian Faith. Suzanne Strempik-Shea went around the country, spent a year doing it, and visited all sorts of different Protestant churches, and we're hearing her tell about that. And when we come back, I want to hear her talk about having her feet washed by a Seventh-day Adventist at a church in rural Connecticut. I want to hear about that. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. Here are the phone numbers if you'd like to join us and share your experiences. 800-642-1234, that's a toll-free number. 800-642-1234, toll-free. In Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just about 8:43. Next hour, Kathleen Dunn is in. The Wisconsin Working Land Steering Committee met last week to discuss ways to preserve farmland. After 9, Kathleen Dunn talks with the Secretary of Agriculture and others about their recommendations. That's after 9, next hour, here on the Ideas Network. In this hour of the broadcast, we're talking with the author of the book Sundays in America, A Year-Long Road Trip in Search of Christian Faith, Suzanne Strempik-Shea. She's on the phone with us, and you could be too at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. If you're a shy person and would rather send us an email, the address is talk@wpr.org. Now, I want to hear about having your feet washed by a Seventh-day Adventist in Connecticut.
Well, this is not something that I had anticipated because, again, I did not know this was the day for that. This is a certain day for communion in this church, a certain day for foot washing, and I hit both of those in one Saturday. This was my one Saturday church that I went to, the Seventh-day Adventist worship on their Sabbath being the Saturday. And I went, the hook that I hung this on is that there's a fantastic term called the Great Disappointment, and that is the term given to the day back in 1844 when the members of this religion expected Christ to return to earth, and he didn't show up. So I, in reading about them, and it was October was coming up, and I'm thinking, oh, I should visit them on the anniversary of this day. So I did, and I also visited the Seventh-day Adventists because it is one of the most hugely growing religions in the world. There's about 14 million of them, and it's growing at an enormous rate in other countries. And this church actually was one of the most multicultural that I attended. Very often, I would be sitting just among black people or just among white people, or the exclusion would be, well, this was one of them. Also, this had an Asian population as well. But some of the mega churches certainly go across the board with, you know, all types of races and countries of origin, which is beautiful to see. But very often it was very, very segregated. And this was a church that had all types of folks attending, which I loved. But, you know, so I wandered in and took my seat, and there were lots of songs, there were lots of readings, lots of kids going up to have their part in the service, and then we were told that the men were going to go into one room for foot washing and the women into the other, and so I started immersing myself in the prayer book in the bench and hoping no one would look at me, and a woman in my pew came over and said, well, please come with us, and it's just that I didn't know what this was about, and certainly, you know, I wanted to see it, but did I want to, get into what I thought was a sacrament? I did not receive communion in any of these churches that I attended because I know the great amount of study that goes on in the Catholic Church before you can receive communion, and I didn't feel like in any of these other churches did I know the preparation. And even if they were saying, if you're here today, you're welcome to come up, I didn't feel part of that. So this is something that I also didn't feel like, well, do I have to study in order to be part of this? But this woman was inviting me, so I went. And before I knew it, she was taking my socks off and putting my feet in a basin and washing my feet. And when that was over, which was okay, just kind of odd because we hardly even knew each other's names, I had to wash her feet, which was interesting. And it is, you know, in a way, when you look back, it's very humbling because this is how people were greeted in Jesus' time. Into a house, they're all walking around either barefoot or with sandals, and you don't come into a house with your dirty feet. And so it really harkens back to the root of everything, to that time that Jesus walked on earth. So that was beautiful in a way, but certainly not something that I, again, from a Catholic background, where probably the most interaction that we have is something new in our church, which is the sign of peace, where you actually turn around and shake hands. And even that is kind of very fast. And like I was saying before, with the hymns that are sung in Protestant churches, any sign of peace that I experienced in the Protestant church took 5-10 minutes. Hey, how's your grandmother? I hear you have a new job. It's great to see you. You haven't been here for a while. I heard you were ill. And, you know, so everything just takes longer in these churches. And it was very leisurely and very heartfelt, as was this ceremony.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Colleen in Viroqua next. Colleen, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just wondering, is it a standard practice to collect monetary funds in the services that you attended, and starting with the Shaker community? Or did you ever find a service where that was not part of the morning?
There was no money asked for at the Shakers. I know that for a fact. Most of these places did pass a basket or a brass plate or a little velvet sack or something around, but they would say, if you're visiting today, please do not feel, we would rather you not contribute, you are our guests here. And so, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting because I'd never heard that. Certainly when the basket goes around in the church in which I was raised, you know, there's no exclusions. But this was great. Hey, if you're here for the first time, don't worry, we're just happy you're here, your gift is your presence. So, but yeah, there's a lot of money being collected in some of these churches. And it also, this year, really hit home for me the word tithe. And I'd certainly heard it in Bible readings. And in my church, we received a box of envelopes once a year. And, you know, you would put inside, you know, whatever you felt. But a lot of the folks that I encountered in this year, they take that whole thing of 10% of your time or talent very, very seriously. And as a matter of fact, in the first church I attended, which was a wonderful Baptist church in Harlem, there was even a chart in the weekly bulletin. If you only make this much a year, this is what your 10% is. If you only make this much, this is what it is. And kind of an opposite of that is when I went down to Rick Warren's church near Anaheim, California. He's the author of The Purpose-Driven Life, which behind the Bible is the biggest-selling hardcover ever in our country. And so he's a very, very popular author and runs a megachurch called Saddleback. And he reverse tithes. So he gives 90% of his time and talent and lives on 10%, but I really think he can probably swing it with the 10% because of how popular the book has
His 10% is probably bigger than my 100%,
there you go.
I'm guessing. You will find a number of Protestant churches that don't have offering during the service. There may be a box in the back.
Right, yeah.
The members are expected to tithe, and they don't bother to collect during church.
Yeah, actually, I went to a cowboy church out in Colorado, and there was the cowboy tithe boxes in the back. I remember that.
Mike in Rice Lake, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning, and thanks for the good topic.
Thank you.
I grew up Catholic, but I went to the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and took their World Religious Studies program and graduated there in 4 years. It's a small but excellent program. And I'm currently in graduate school as a school counselor. And recently in a multiculturalism class, it was my job to give a presentation on religion. And I was once again reminded and shocked at the huge hole that is in American kids' knowledge because of separation of church and state. We've been very careful not to teach religion in school, which I think is a wise choice, but it also has led to this huge hole in religious history and even awareness of the difference of really fundamental things like what's the difference between a Catholic and a Protestant? What is Protestant? Is Protestant Lutheran? And things like that. And I guess in California, they recently, in Northern California, one school went to teaching religion as a core subject in high school, and they found a lot of good results with that, with tolerance. I was wondering what you think about that.
Well, I know certainly my eyes have been opened as far as, okay, what do these folks do? What do these folks believe? And isn't it amazing that it's not that far from what I was brought up in? And you know, I give an example in the book about my uncle during World War II went to church while he was stationed in England and came out and was shocked to see on the sign that he was in a Church of England church and that he had been worshiping there. He thought it was a Catholic church because the service was so similar. And, you know, that was his one and only time out. And how did he learn? He's never really gone around and toured anything. And if you can't make this kind of a tour, how do you find out? Well, through a class or through books or whatever. I think we only benefit from finding out what our neighbors and friends believe. And even if you are not a religious person, or you can be an atheist or an agnostic or whatever, it's something that's important to a large amount of people in this world and in our country. And I just think we need to know one another better. I think as cities get larger, as towns get larger, as people become more insular in their existences, that how do we find out what our neighbors are all about? And I'm with you. I think world religion should be offered as an elective in all schools because I missed the opportunity to take that. And I feel like I've kind of had a mini version of it, you know, just in this little slice of Christianity that I've done. But oh, definitely. And the whole thing about too is you know, I hear people talking about, you know, our candidates, and well, he's a Mormon, and the Mormons, oh, you know, do you hear what they do? Even when I was going up to a Mormon meeting house up in Vermont, when I was leaving, and I use that actually in the book as the lead to that chapter, people were saying, don't go alone. They're crazy. You're not going up there, are you? And it's that sort of thing where, you know, we have these impressions. And I went up there, and it was kind of like a sleepy service, and the people were nice. So I think we need to find out what other people are believing before we put these labels on them that they're crazy or they're bad or they're all trying to kill us.
Patty in Green Bay is next. Patty, good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. I like the subject. You're doing a really nice job, Suzanne, explaining your journey.
Thank you, Pat.
You know, that's how we all grow in faith, is exploring our journey. But I guess I was raised in a Catholic church in Madison, and it's very different than your Catholic church, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot more liberal. I went to 12 years of Catholic education, and I survived. And I did a world religion class in high school. We had lots of choices and opportunities in high school for different...
Isn't that great?
Religious classes. Yeah, and we went to a synagogue, and, you know, we talked about what it meant to be Muslim and Hindu, and, you know, we had a marriage class, of course, taught by a priest, and that was interesting. But,
yeah.
You know, I think there's two, you know, the Catholic Church is such a big, broad tent, and there's so much room for growth in it and to explore your faith, and I think sometimes people just want to, you know, put us in a little box And we don't, you know, to say that like there's a Catholic position on an election or on a, you know, an environmental issue, I think that's it's a little misguided, you know. But I was very fortunate, and you know, we're about the same age, and I was raised after Vatican II. You know, we had a sister that became a pastoral associate that taught us religion, and she was talked about love and, you know, about John and the letters of Paul, and you know, I always felt very loved in my church.
Aren't you lucky? No, you know, and you know, and I felt at home with and with my family, as I was saying earlier, that those were the kids I grew up with, those were the families I lived around, but it certainly wasn't as open as that, and I think, you know, a lot of it is because it is and was at the time more so an immigrant community where it was like going to church in the old world, you know, and so I think, you know, you perhaps had a little bit more of a modern experience, but, you know, it's great to have had some experience in the first place because it gives you some kind of foundation and you can say, all right, well, this is what I know and what do other people know?
In our last few minutes here, I want to go with a question here. It's an email from Bill in Madison, and this is just a great closing question because it kind of wraps this whole thing up. How was your own personal faith affected by your experience, the tour that you made around the United States and all the different churches that that you visited? How did that impact your own personal faith?
That's a great question. I really think it did, and the way it did was that I was reminded nearly all of the 52 Sundays that I did that God is with us not only in that hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, depending on where you attend, 4 hours on a Sunday, but when you close that door, you can feel free to take God with you throughout your week. And I'm somebody who prays in the morning and the evening, but very often in the space between, if I get bad news or I'm celebrating something or whatever, I have not always had God right there next to me during good times and bad. And what I was reminded in this year is that I am free to invite him with me for the rest of the week. I loved the part of the services that had the testimonies where people would stand up and say, there would be a part of the service where people could stand up and tell how God had worked in their life. And they would say, well, I had a job interview this week and God was next to me and I really think it worked out, or I'm taking God with me this week when I have a hospital test, or, you know, I'm asking God for his help because I'm feeling a little bit weak about this addiction or this and that. And I think, gosh, isn't that great? It's sort of like, you know, there's someone you can take the hand of and bring him with you, where I think, again, how I was raised is you close the door and, yeah, you do your prayers, but it's not a presence that you carry with me. And this is really a gift from this year that I can carry God along with me. You know, I'm driving around enough these days, you know, and I've got an empty front seat with me in my car, and just say, come on along and we'll see, you know, how my week goes. And I would say, you know, it was a great reminder, and that was a really nice thing that I was taught, again, by people who didn't even know I was in their presence doing this.
Well, it's a great place to end. Thank you for spending this hour with us.
My pleasure, John. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
You're welcome. Susan Strempik-Shea, the author of the book under discussion this hour, Sundays in America, A Year-Long Road Trip in Search of Christian Faith, published by Beacon Press. This program was produced by Karen Prager, who also handled on-air production along with Rob Ferret. If you'd like a copy of it, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444 and ask for program 611C, that's 611C as in church. That works. If you'd like to listen to it again, you can just go to our website, wpr.org, and listen to the whole thing all over again. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. This week on the Ideas Network, stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is next on the other side of the news.